Would you like to work closer to home, save money on gas, and be rewarded for your hard work and attendance? Then Bellisio Foods is looking for you. That's right. Bellisio Foods is now hiring for multiple positions and shifts with great employee benefits, an on-site health clinic, competitive wages, and advancement opportunities. Bellisio Foods is a company that truly values their employees. Apply online at BelisioFoods.com/careers.
At Vinton County National Bank, we believe in supporting the areas where we live and work. Now, we'd like to honor those who also serve our communities. Our new Community Champions account is especially for first responders, veterans, active military, and anyone employed in the fields of healthcare or education. This account offers rewards, discounts, and other benefits to those who give so much to others. Vinton County National Bank, rewarding those who serve.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the morning show right here on Main Street TV, where I am here with our good friend, Red Thompson Jr. He is looking quite dapper this morning, and we are happy to have you here, Red. So, and you have, okay, Red's full of it this morning, right?
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff going on, and I'm even going to do a little bit of Jackson County news. Pete's going to do the hard stuff, but I've also got some softer stuff from Jackson County, too. So, but we're going to start in Vinton County, in eastern Vinton County this morning. There's a community, Arbaugh Road, and it's between Wellston and Albany on the app, and the agenda of trying to get a water project done there.
Now, is this the same one that they've been working on, or is this a completely different situation?
No, this is a different one.
This
is Leax Water in Albany, and this is an interesting project. It was $418,000, and Leax Water got a grant for it.
Really?
And I told Mr. Larry Barnes, I went out to his house when we found out. He's been trying to get water out there for 30 years with the commissioners. So he's
persistent.
He is. He's worked with Leax, with the congressman. He's met with anybody that could help. And the Benton County commissioners had the OVRDC meeting and Tuesday. And John Hemmings with the OVRDC, he's the executive director. They're based in Waverly. They're the local arm of the Appalachian Regional Commission. And they announced that they're hopeful that they can come up with more money. And what I forgot to mention was the $418,000, because of that dreaded word inflation, has boomed to almost $900,000.
So more than doubled.
More than doubled.
Okay. Would have been better to do it 30 years ago, Red.
It sure would have. They're hoping they need an extra $431,000, and they've applied to the ARC for it, and it's going to be given to the Governor's Office of Appalachia for their consideration. And that's an easier process than the one in Washington. So hopefully that's John Kerry's office, as we all know.
Yeah, a little bit of a local tie there, so that's good.
And, you know, he said, Mr. Hemmings told Mr. Barnes, no promises. Because, you know, he's an honest man, but he said he's hopeful that this will get funded.
That would be wonderful. The fact that there's people around here and that many people in one neighborhood that don't have water, like, I can't even believe that's a thing.
It's hard to run a business without water and broadband, and that's the two things that Benton County's concentrated on.
For sure.
And, Jen, there's a double side to this project. Could be a win-win. Though, have you ever noticed when you're driving on the app, there's no traveling services between Wellston and Albany at all?
When you say traveling services, what do you mean?
There's no convenience stores.
Yeah. So I was driving back from Canton the other day, mm-hmm. and I kept thinking, I'm going to stop and get like a bottle of water or something like that. And I kept putting it off. And I got to Athens, and I got past Athens, and I thought, well, now I'm stuck because there isn't anything between here and Jackson. Well, or Wellston. So, yeah, there's nothing.
The reason is there's no water there.
Really?
No water along the app.
Because it seems to me that there would be plenty of opportunity for a place to be there.
Well, there's the traffic, but there isn't the utilities. Now, this project would put lines along the Appalachian Highway.
Oh.
So it could open up some of those side turnoffs that's on 32. It could open it up for commercial development.
Nice.
And once something is there, it could be built down the road if something wants to come in 2 or 3 miles. It's a lot easier to... You can't expand something if it's not there. So once something gets there, and if someone wants to build a business 2 or 3 miles down the road, you know, there's a water tap 2 miles away instead of 15 miles away.
Right. No, I mean, it sounds a little more feasible, yeah.
So, you know, this project could open up development on the app. And the app is just not a local. This is going to be missing in my story, but the app is not just a regional highway for Southern Ohio. The app is part of a network of highways from Cincinnati to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, okay.
You get to Parkersburg, West Virginia, you take 50, then you take 79 into Pittsburgh. So it's certainly a regional, U.S. regional route. It has a lot of traffic on it. And certainly development could help Benton County's tax base. Are we on?
No, we're on.
Okay.
What is it doing?
That we got cut off too. Development could help Benton County's tax base, create some jobs for people.
Sure.
And
plus so, be convenient for folks as well.
Yeah, Traveler Services was listed as a possibility along the app, and water and broadband. Would you start a business without water and broadband?
No.
And certainly,
it's pretty much impossible in today's world.
It is, and the camping, you know, certainly the water would be amenable to the camping business and the cabin lodging business in Benton County, which is booming. There's just I wouldn't, you know, rent a cabin without water in it. So that's another issue. So this could be a great project for the county. No promises. Hopefully it can get funded. 18 people will get water. That's the most important thing. But the other issue is commercial development on the app. I think Ohio would, hopefully they'll look at this project and see that it could be a value to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And also there's a new, I guess it's ODOT in the past hasn't allowed their right-of-ways to be used for public utility projects, but that may be changing. And if they can use ODOT right-of-ways on the app, they could save $250,000 on this project.
Okay.
And we understand that there's a plant site in Fayette County that are allowing this to happen. So, you know, it may be a change in...
Maybe setting a precedent for future development for us. Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, I don't know what all's involved in... I'm not a highway engineer. I don't know what's involved in the right-of-way usage, but, you know, I'm sure that if ODOT can help, they will. If there's some reason that they can't, maybe structure or there's a lot of stress and all that on these highways, you know, they got to watch out for it. If they can't, they can't. But I'm sure if they can, hopefully they will. So that'd be good. How would you like to have $10 billion, Jen?
$10 billion?
Billion.
I would suffer through receiving $10 billion.
Okay. But not in Zimbabwe money.
Probably not, no.
We learned something on Tuesday at the Benton County Commissioners meeting. Zimbabwe money's not worth very much.
Okay.
And we're leading into something here. Ohio congressional candidate Charles Tassel came to Benton County. And he's one of the crowded person in the crowded field of people running for that seat that Brad Winstrup has. He's not going to run for re-election, so there's just a lot of people running for it. He's one of them. He's a real estate person from Batavia, and one of the suburbs of Cincinnati, and he was in MacArthur. And he's discussed his concerns about the border situation at the southern states,
okay.
Texas, Arizona, Utah, and showed us a little bit about Zimbabwe money, and it's worth 39 cents, the $10 million bill. Let's take a look at that video, Hayden, and of Charles Tassel in Benton County. Okay, Red Thompson on the Total Media channel, and we're here with Ohio congressional candidate Charles Tassel. He came and spoke to the Benton County commissioners today. And you say your background's in real estate, and why don't you introduce yourself to our Southern Ohio audience and tell us a little bit about your background first.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. Charles Tassel. My background is in real estate. I've been an advocate. I actually worked with Citizens for Community Values for a number of years, worked on issues on life. I'm an FFL. I have very supportive of the Second Amendment. I have quite a few firearms myself and support the Second Amendment. Actually just endorsed by the Buckeye Firearms Association as well. So I'm an elder at my church, married 31 years, have three kids, and I've served as a council member for 8 years. So this isn't something new on the service side. I believe in servant leadership. That's the reason, make sure I'm out everywhere, meet with folks. We want to make sure we're hearing what's going on. God gave us 2 ears and one mouth to use in proportion to make sure we're working to really understand what's going on and figure out the problems in order to really get the solutions.
You're concerned about our southern border, and this certainly affects Texas and other states, New Mexico, Arizona. What would you like to see done about the southern border of the United States?
Well, there's two pieces to it. I think that we've got budgets and borders are the two things, and most of our issues are cascading out of that. Especially when it comes to the borders, look, you've got to fix the wall, and we got to get it in place. We also have to fix the gate and making sure it's done properly, not for illegals, but for a legal process to come in. So that's kind of the first steps, is taking care of that. And then you've got to make sure that ICE comes in behind the scenes, and we've got people who are here illegally backing law enforcement to get them out. Because the reality is, we've got people who are dodging coyotes and cartels, trying to get in the country, usually bringing drugs with them. They've got precursors coming in from China, going to Mexico, being made into drugs that are killing our folks. And we've got to address that and stop it right now.
And you're also concerned about the rampant inflation. You showed us you were showing us, and you might want to bring that out. That'd be interesting for our audience. So,
not too often you get to see $10 billion in one place. So this is a $10 billion bill. And it's Zimbabwe money, and this is an example of what happens when the printing presses don't stop. They printed themselves into oblivion, and at $34 trillion in debt and 40% of our budget being borrowed, we're doing exactly the same thing. So we've got to stop that and turn it around.
And, you know, a lot of people are worried about America, but for several, you know, you said you made a lot of American dreams come true in the real estate business. When you get to Washington, how are you going to make America better for the Generation Zs and and they're worried about it, especially after the baby boomers finally, you know, not as big a significant group as they are now. What do you got to say to the younger people and about the American future?
First of all, the American dream is still alive and well. And we want to protect that. That means making sure that housing is available, but that also means making sure that jobs are available. I am a big fan of reshoring, bringing back the manufacturing facilities, and bringing them back to home. But that also means making sure our folks have the ability to go to schools, technical schools, trade schools, and really be able to build their skills so that they can take advantage of it and not fall behind and let the rest of the world push them out of the way.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Wow. Yeah, I'm glad I don't have any Zimbabwe money. Not dependent on that.
Yeah, couldn't even buy a snack with that. That's we got to get that water project done in Benton County before it doubles again.
That's right. No, I get what he's saying. He's saying if we don't quit printing money, we're going to be in bad shape.
Yeah, I mean, money's only, there has to be some kind of standard. When we went off of the gold standard, the money wasn't secured as like it was at one time. And I think we come off the gold standard maybe in the 1970s or something. But that was the standard for a long time. It was the money was backed up by gold.
Mm-hmm.
And we come off of that. And so, you know, money has to be, you know, money isn't everything, but it's hard to live without it. And it's what makes business go and what makes society go. And you got to have a good financial system. So he brought up some important issues there. We have some good news from MacArthur.
Good news.
Jen, you were there and when we broke ground on the bank.
I was, yes.
And we got a picture of, there it is right there. They're coming along there on West Main Street in MacArthur. Well, didn't Randy Evans do nice work then?
Oh, he's amazing.
And the people of Benton County is going to be very proud of this bank. The bank is cementing the promise to stay in Benton County and to provide modern facilities, and you can see evidence of that right there. Jen, the bank has been there since the end of, or just after, the U.S. Civil War ended.
Wow.
1867, the bank has been there in Benton County.
That's like really hard to wrap your head around.
I mean, they're back there with the iconic banks, you know, Wells Fargo mm-hmm. was there at that time. And, you know, a lot of the banks, there were banks back in the 1800s, but not many of them's left today. I mean, so
I wouldn't think so.
This is a local bank that has expanded. And Mr. Evans also built the Jackson County Banking Center out here on McCarty Drive here in Jackson.
Don't mind Dylan.
And he does excellent work, and I'm sure it's going to, and that bank's going to have Benton County hardwood, some of the trees from Benton County.
So. Yeah, it's really cool, and I think what's really neat about when the Benton County builds these banks is they kind of pay homage to the local community wherever they are, and this one pays homage to Benton County's timber industry. So pretty cool.
Yeah, it's going to look a little bit like a lodge, and
Yeah. Obviously
that the tourism industry too. And we don't have any tourism stuff today except for that. There's some stuff brewing in that. Usually when we talk about Benton County, that's a lead, but today we talked about water. But we also had some good stuff at the high school. And National Signing Day. And we had four young men and a young lady signed their national college letters yesterday.
That's wonderful.
National Signing Day. And do you have a picture of Aston Allman? Okay. This is the only picture I prepared for TV. We're going to have more in the Telegram in an article. That is Aston Allman in the center there with his parents. And he has signed a Division I scholarship. And we don't have that many Division I's around here. It's a small Division I. It's in North Carolina, Campbell University. Aston Allman was the tight end on the football team on the very successful Benton County football team that went to the playoffs.
Yeah.
He is the center and power forward on the basketball team. And it's only had four losses so far this year. And just a wonderful young man. He wants to, like a lot of young people today, he wants to start his own business after he gets his degree. He's going to major in business, and he wants to open a gym.
Okay.
Another Benton County graduate has done that, and he is now a coach. So And so a lot of young people, they want to open their own business today. That seems to be a trend.
That love I that. Read.
So, and the other, we don't have pictures of all of them, but just wanted to mention the other signees yesterday, James Swain. He was a defensive and offensive lineman. He's going to go to Ohio Dominican. He wants to be a special ed major. Ian Moeller, he's going to go to Wittenberg, and he's going to be a cybersecurity major.
Oh, cool.
And in this world, that's you're never going to be out of
work. No, you won't be out of work there.
And Brady Worth, he was one of the cornerbacks on the football team on that great. The Vikings had the one of the best defenses they've ever had. I mean, that team, the defense and special teams, not only prevented points, they scored some points. They had field goals, they had interception returns, punt returns, fumble pickups for scores. The defense was a big contributor, and Brady's going to major in sports business, and he either wants to work for a professional team or be an AD at a high school.
Okay.
One or the other. And we also had a young lady that signed with golf. She played for Coach Brian Radaball. And she signed for golf at Alice Lloyd in Kentucky.
Okay.
And that's one of those colleges that's kind of unique. You work your way through.
Oh.
It's a couple.
Kind of like Berea?
Yeah, it's just. Yeah, kind of in the same vein, yes. Alice Lloyd doesn't quite have the national. Berea has a big national reputation. They know it all over the country. But Alice Lloyd's in the same vein. They do the same type.
Gotcha.
Kids work their way through. And so congratulations to all that signed. And I think Pete will probably mention that one of our very own, I guess, Total Media, our former general manager, Amanda Crabtree, her son Ethan signed.
Oh.
Later in the day. And I'm sure Pete will mention that later when he comes on. But he signed with University of Virginia at Wise.
Okay.
Down in the Virginia mountains.
I had a feeling that kid would be playing somewhere.
He's a fine young man. And we thank Amanda for all she did here at Total Media.
Yeah.
Well, I was glad to be there yesterday. Todd Cumston, our sports editor, he's going to have that story and video. Video's online now. So if you want to see what he had to say, you can check us out on the Telegram News Facebook page. A couple other quick things. I'm going to turn our attention to Jackson County on a couple final things. Tuesday night, Jen, it's Queen. We're into the Queen crowning time.
Okay.
Oak Hill High School, we were there on Tuesday night. There was Macy Potter being crowned by Maddie Lewis. She's the 2024 Oak Hill High School Sweetheart Queen. And we have some video of all the preparations leading up to the crowning. So if you would, Hayden.
Emma is the daughter of Daniel and Mary Newman. She is escorted tonight by Dylan Stickley, son of Joe and Rebecca Stickley. Emma is on the cross country and track team, as well as a member of both National Honor Society and a drug free club. In her free time, she enjoys community theater, running, and hanging out with friends. She is escorted tonight by Luke Reese, son of Pat Reese and Samantha Rose. Gracie is a member of the National Honor Society, a senior class vice president, and is on the golf team. In her free time, she enjoys spending time with friends and family, traveling, and reading. Macy is the daughter of Clint and Lisa Otto. She is escorted tonight by Dave Carr, son of Greg and Rochelle Carr. Macy is a varsity volleyball player
returning 2023 sweetheart for you, Ms. Maddie Lewis. Maddie is the daughter of Aaron Lewis and Duran Green. She is escorted by Ray Michael, son of Aaron and Andrew Michael. Maddie is currently attending Ohio University studying nursing. Before announcing the queen, we would like to congratulate each of these ladies for being selected by their classmates and remind each of them that it is an honor to be nominated by their peers to represent their school. And now, with 2024, Sweetheart's Queen is...
Congratulations to Macy, and we'll have a lot of Queens crownings coming up this year, Jen.
Yeah, sounds like it.
That's the first of many.
Yeah. We're getting into, believe it or not, as the spring rolls on, we get into fair and festival season, not too far away. Can you believe it?
Oh, I know. That's always coming up. And a couple other things I wanted to mention before Pete comes in. Wanted to plug the big show coming up at Scotty's on First. And this kind of fits in with a new format that we have. Doug Stone's going to be at Scotty's on First on February 17th. One big show, 7 o'clock. And Doug Stone's best known for I'm Better Off in a Pine Box. Stone hard traditional country songs.
Yep.
And so I don't know. I hear it's close to being sold out. You might want to check his Facebook page, Scotty's on First in Wellston. And he's bringing in some big-time country music. I think Terry McBride's going to be with him.
Awesome.
They're going to do an acoustic show. So
well, that sounds interesting.
Yeah, a lot of them's doing it. Jesse Keith Whitley did an acoustic show. And then he was down at Ashland with his mom, Lori Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
So... And if you haven't heard, either through the air or on our app, the Waverly station that we now become the owners of, they've switched to a format called Hank FM. And it is a little bit older country music, but it kind of has an attitude. J.J. Hale, our very own, runs the Blue Collar Breakfast and show. And if you can't pick up the station on the air, you can hear it on our Total Media app. It's country music. Like I said, it's a little bit older country music, but you hear a lot of the big stars from the 90s. 90s country's really gained in popularity. And what we learned from Jesse Keith Whitley, Jen, is Keith Whitley's music is just exploding.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think that is 30 years after he passes away that he's so...
You know, I think it's not necessarily Keith Whitley per se, although I've always been a huge fan, but I think classic country is a genre that's now up and coming, strangely enough. And, you know, the people of my generation, all of those songs now, as you said, Doug Stone and all of those that we grew up with are now classic country. And I think then you just kind of... It all falls into that category. And I've been listening to... I was listening to Earl Thomas Conley 2 days ago, like at my house. And so, yeah, I just love classic country. It's great.
Okay, and final thing, and Pete has stepped in, so I'm going to be yielding my chair to him. But Pete, as they say in Congress, yield the time. final thing. A big shout out to the Vinton County Lady Vikings bowling team. Jen, they are about they're about to win the OCC.
Look at that.
Oh, yeah. And,
that's awesome.
And the members of the team, I'm not sure if they're in order because I just got this on Facebook from Coach Amy Ward, but the Lady Vikings, Mallory Bledsoe, Riley McNichols, and Emma Davidson, Olivia Schroeder, and Jessica Wells were the five names provided. And they have a big match coming up I think on February 17th, and they could have Leota Lanes in Wellston, and they could be the Ohio Capital Conference champion. It'd be the first time in Vinton County bowling. They picked up the sport a few years ago.
I love that there's bowling teams. We have some really talented kids around here.
Yeah, we really do. And you can see young men like Dylan over there, young men like Hayden. The future's in good hands with young men like that. And a lot of wonderful congratulations to everybody that signed and, you know, get their future started. And so it was a good day. A lot of the good stuff is get some water and get these kids playing college ball and get the bank finished. And a lot of good stuff going on, Jen.
That's exactly right.
And, Jen, thanks so much for having us again.
Of course. It's our pleasure to have you stop by.
Enjoyed it. We had a lot going on. Pete's got a lot from Jackson County. And enjoy the Duck Stone Show. Get over at Scotty's home first and enjoy that. That'll be a... And it's nice to see big-time entertainment coming to Jackson County. This makes the second big concert Scott's had. And he's got more in the works, I understand. So, anyway, have a great day, everybody. We'll turn things over to Pete.
All right. Well, thank you, Red. Come on over, Pete.
Thank you, sir.
And we shall party the second half with Pete Wilson. A party with Pete Wilson. Okay, I see a segment of brewing.
Okay, well, I'm not exactly sure it's going to be a party, but we may as well have a good time while we're here.
I mean,
here,
why
right?
not?
Okay. All right, well, we do want to start off with a traffic advisory. This is going on right now. It's in the city of Wellston. A one-block section of Ohio Avenue on the south side, city just put this advisory out this morning. The block of Ohio Avenue on from East 11th Street to East 12th Street on the south side, it is going to be closed. It's closed now and will remain so through the late afternoon. That's the word we have from the city of Wellston. Mm-hmm. And there is a water line replacement project going on there
okay.
right now. So be advised if you're traveling in that area. Okay, well, we're going to circle back to what certainly is one of the biggest stories of early 2024, and it is a continuation. There was a big gap in there between when it happened and how it ended.
Okay.
But we're talking about the determination on the officer-involved shooting that took place on January 31st, 2023. This, of course, was out on Jisco West Road, a residence there. It's Hayden's put it up there. This is where maybe the big story of 2023 in Jackson County occurred. An officer-involved shooting where the suspect, who was inside the structure here that you're looking at, William Beach Jr., also known as Willie, he was shot by a Jackson County Sheriff's Office deputy when two or three deputies breached the door there to try to end that episode. And Mr. Beach was shot in the upper chest, and he ended up dying later that day. Okay, of course, this triggered a major investigation. It instantly, the same day, went to the Ohio BCII, so it's not a local investigation. The sheriff's office doesn't investigate itself. Of course, you don't want that. And that investigation started, basically almost that same day that it occurred, January 31st, 2023. We're talking about
A
little bit more than a year ago. So it was in BCII's hands, and then it was in the hands of the Special Prosecutions Unit of the Ohio Attorney General's Office. And for those of you who may not be aware, the Ohio BCII is an arm of the Ohio Attorney General's Office. It's part of state law enforcement. So Jackson County Prosecutor Randy Dupree, for the same reason that the Jackson County Sheriff's Office, couldn't be involved, he turned this over to the Special Prosecutions Unit of the Ohio Attorney General's office to make sure that this was handled, away from Jackson County.
Yeah.
So there's no questions about conflicts
exactly.
or anything like
that.
That
makes sense.
Well, after the investigation was over, I can't give you a date on that, but it was in the hands of the legal people at the Ohio Attorney General's office on, what are we going to do about this? This is after they reviewed all the evidence, the body cam evidence. They did their interviews, they did their analysis and so forth. They ended up taking it on January 17th to a to a special session of the Jackson County Grand Jury. And, of course, grand jury...
17th of this
17th
year.
Of,
okay.
17th of January.
Okay.
This just a couple weeks ago. Okay. And the grand jury, of course, indicts. It doesn't convict. It determines if there is enough evidence, probable cause, that this should go to trial.
Yes.
All right.
Because we can indict a grape.
Right. We do not know. Well, the old saying is you can indict a ham sandwich yes. at a grand jury because it's basically...
Should we take this to trial?
Right. There's
not enough stuff to take it to trial.
Not a defense attorney involved or whatever, right. But I know that the attorney general normally does do this, for a final review and like that. And the grand jury did what they call a no bill, which means that there was no indictment. You know, however many grand jurors there are usually nine. They take a vote, and a certain majority of them have to vote to indict. In this case, there was no indictment.
Okay.
And so Jackson County Sheriff Ted Frazier, of course, and his staff, and, of course, the deputy have lived with this for, every year.
The
family. Of course, has been waiting
right.
too.
Yeah, absolutely.
For what the determination was. They did one or two protest events. Mm-hmm. One out in front of the sheriff's office, feeling it was called Justice for Willie, feeling like you know the sheriff's office had responsibility for that mm-hmm. death.
Right.
And I interviewed Jackson County Sheriff Ted Frazier after it was confirmed what the grand jury did, because the grand jury deliberates in secret, and I had
sure.
to work to get confirmation that the grand jury had done its thing. The attorney general has not put out any news release or anything like that. They have things on their website about the investigation, but not the result or its findings. So I talked with Ted Frazier, and he gave me a wonderful interview. It was very incisive. He very open, very transparent about his feelings about the whole thing,
okay.
How he feels on the back end. Obviously, very relieved, but still feels that all along, based on what he knew, and he was out there on the scene that day,
okay.
he felt like the deputy did the only thing he could in that situation. The deputy breached, along with a couple other deputies, breached the door there. There was no other door to enter that structure. And the thought was that Mr. Beach, they knew Mr. Beach had a some kind of handgun.
Right.
Turned out to be a BB gun, actually. Oh. They didn't know that at the time.
Right.
He also had a hatchet that was seen, supposedly made threats, too, towards law enforcement. And when the sheriff's office deputy breached, he felt like Mr. Beach had a gun and was pointing it in his direction. And so... he was exonerated or cleared basically by the grand jury. And one of the comments that Sheriff Frazier had is that the deputy, this isn't easy, even if you get cleared, it's a heavy thing to
sure.
shoot
Absolutely.
And kill somebody. It's a heavy thing. You never want that to be the result. He said that this deputy did what any other law enforcement officer in the state of Ohio is trained to do in a situation like this. Of course, it had to be looked at. And, when you have, it's not like there was a lot of witnesses here. You had two or three deputies, and all you had was Mr. Beach inside, and obviously he's not in a position
right.
to speak through himself as he died later that day. But that story, Jennifer, was in our Wednesday paper, big spiel across the top of the front page. It is posted as well. And, if you didn't see the paper, you're not a subscriber, I urge you to, buy a paper, get online, and take a look at that, because certainly... that was a big story at the time. It continued to be, and it kind of like fell out of the public limelight there because it took so long for it to be resolved.
Right.
I remember that I made several calls up to BCI into the early summer, and it was an ongoing investigation. It's in the hands of the Special Prosecutions Unit. It's not over with. And every month, I stopped asking after a while.
So you got to hurry up and wait.
And... we had heard unofficially that the grand jury was going to meet as early as October. Well, it didn't happen, didn't meet any of those last 3 months of the year, but did indeed meet on January the 17th. So that was a big story that was in Wednesday's paper, and this was the first chance that I had to talk
okay.
to you about that. But the deputy did remain on duty and is still working for the sheriff's office, and I know... as tragic as this is, I know that this was an important result for the sheriff's office because, to be honest, you flat don't know.
Mm-hmm. You're right.
But it, you know, it was looked at for a long time by the Ohio Attorney General's office, and they put out a news release, unrelated news release, almost a month ago, and you would be surprised how many officer-involved shootings that they have investigated in 2023.
Interesting.
It was over 20.
Oh, wow.
And I don't know how many deaths there were, but, you know, no officers lost their lives in officer-involved shootings in 2023, but there were some other victims, you know, suspects that were involved who did lose their lives as well as being injured. All right, we'll go to another law enforcement story. This one gained some exposure on Facebook, and we did get a back-end report from the Vinton County Sheriff's Office. It occurred on Hampden Hill, which, of course, is just outside of Jackson County on State Route 93.
Okay.
And this was on Monday evening. And, of course, you know, it's heavily traveled there.
Yeah.
You know, people going back and forth, MacArthur there on the north end of 93 here in our local area, and then, of course, Wellston and Jackson on and Oak Hill on down the line. But there was a man lying on the roadway on early Monday evening, and nobody knew exactly what happened. But the man, even though he was, if not injured, impaired maybe, he tried to get in some vehicles along the way. You know, that would be pretty startling if you're driving through there. You know, you see somebody lying in the roadway or crouched in the roadway, and then, you know, as you slow down to make sure you don't hit them, they try to get in your vehicle. This happened with more than one vehicle, I understand. Well, of course, the Vinton County Sheriff's Office goes to the scene. The Hampden Fire Department was there as well. Maybe other emergency service agencies as well. They actually closed the highway for a short time there because of what was going on. But the bottom line is that the Vinton County Sheriff's Office made contact with the male. They determined that he was, this is their quote in the news release, combative and appeared to be intoxicated. The roadway was shut down. They took the subject to, Vinton County MS took the subject to Holzer Medical Center, Jackson Hospital.
Okay.
For a look-see. Not sure if the person was injured, but the speculation was, according to the sheriff's office, maybe they know now, but at the time the news release was put out, they said they feel the male either fell out of the car or was jumped out of the car, one or the other.
Okay.
And so he was alone in the roadway there when these other vehicles came along and these incidents happened. He did have a large wound on his head, and he was definitely trying to get into multiple vehicles shortly after he was out on the roadway. They took him to Holzer, you know, for his injuries and also for his condition, but they believe, once again, he either jumped out of the vehicle or somebody threw him out.
Okay.
We'll try to get a follow-up on that. The male was not identified in the news release, probably because at the time it was put out, there was no arrest involved.
Gotcha.
All right. Okay.
This is the weirdest story ever.
Right. It was weird. It got on the What's Going On Wellston Facebook page. And you know how that goes. A lot of people don't really know anything, but they hear about it, and then they comment, and then, you know, there might be all sorts of misinformation that gets out there because people want to know what's going on.
Yeah.
But it did attract a lot of attention there. All right. Also from the law enforcement front, this is also from the Vinton County Sheriff's Office.
So strange.
Right. Strange but true. This is a theft case that involved both Jackson County and Vinton County, reported by the Vinton County Sheriff's Office. This incident occurred last Sunday. That was February 4th. Anyway, it all started when the Sheriff's Office in Vinton County was contacted by the Wellston Police Department. They advised that a citizen had informed them that two individuals had stolen multiple bags of ice from the Family Dollar store in Wilkesville, and that they were currently at a gas station in Wellston. That gas station turned out to be the Detour, which I believe is up there by the General Mills plant. Anyway, deputies from the Vinton County Sheriff's Office responded there, along with the Wellston police. A truck was located there, and in that truck was 27 bags of ice. That's... You know, if somebody is accused of stealing multiple bags of ice, and, you know, you see that pretty strong circumstantial evidence, the two suspects...
Why?
Well, I don't know. They didn't tell me why. But Justin Hopkins...
I need to know.
Okay, well, you can do your own speculation. Maybe a big party that night. Justin Hopkins, age 33, of the Plains, and Vicki Bauer, age 44, of Athens, were both detained, and they were later arrested after they were found to be in possession of 27 bags of ice taken from the Family Dollar store in Wilkesville. They are facing charges of theft. They were transported to the Southeastern Ohio Regional Jail by the Vinton County Sheriff's Office. They did indeed find 27 bags of ice in their truck. It has been returned to the Family Dollar in Wilkesville. So, you know, a lot of times the big ice containers are outside a store.
Yeah.
I don't know whether they're always locked, but somebody, in this case, I don't know whether there was a break-in or not, but they...
What do you do with 27 bags of ice, Pete?
I'm not sure.
I mean, that's a lot of work to take 27 bags of ice and put it in your truck.
It definitely is. It definitely is. All right, well, let's go to a good news story now. You know, I've filled your head with these things. I've told you the what and the how and the who. I can't tell you the why, so I know I've got you going.
I feel like I need to know, though. Can we call somebody about that?
All right, well, you know, I tell you, what part of being a news person is you follow up. So we'll maybe try to do that. But you know what happens when we start to do that? Something new happens.
Yes, it's like whatever.
All right, well, let's go to a good news story.
Okay.
All right, Ethan Crabtree, senior place kicker.
Little Amanda.
That's right, yes. Amanda and HD's son.
Yes.
Youngest son, and what a high achiever he is. Of course, as a senior place kicker at Jackson High School, he had one of the best football seasons a place kicker will ever have. All he did was he hit 62 out of 64 extra points. He kicked 4 of 5 field goal attempts, including a 46-yarder. That's college level. And as a kickoff man, he kicked it into the end zone, 59 out of 83 kickoffs, which means you don't have a chance to run the ball
back
when
exactly.
that happens. The team starts on the 20-yard line, and it's a good thing for your defense. Well, anyway, obviously, his prowess as a kicker has gained attention of the college guys.
I would assume that was going to happen.
And Ethan has had several offers, maybe more than several, but he has chosen, and that's the news peg. Wednesday evening at the Marquette Cultural Arts Center, there was a signing ceremony, and he is going to UVA-wise in the state of Virginia. And UVA stands for the University of Virginia. This is an affiliated university of the University of Virginia, a smaller school. It has its own accreditation, but it is connected to the University of Virginia. He could have gone to Morehead State and Ashland, Ohio University. At least those two were mentioned.
Okay.
But, he's going to the UVA-wise as a college kicker. So congratulations
awesome.
To him.
Yay.
Todd Compston was at the signing ceremony on Wednesday. He'll be doing a story. But he did catch Ethan for a little video interview that we're going to share with you right now.
Awesome.
Let's do this again. It's been a pretty rough go of it with the recruiting process and all. So when UVA reached out, I hadn't really known where I'd be going. I was taking 2-3 visits a week trying to find the right place for me. When I got on UVA's campus, right then and there, I knew that it was home. Just everywhere you look is a view. Coaching staff was amazing. Facilities are nice, very nice for a D2 level. Just the area in general was exactly what I was looking for. The conference is all in Southern State games. So it's just nice and warmer throughout the year, unlike Ohio weather. So it's definitely what I was looking forward to.
What other schools, aside from UVA, was you either looking at, interested in, or they were interested in looking at you?
When it came towards the end, I kind of narrowed it down to my top three. It was between Morehead University, Ashland University, and UVA-wise. Kind of narrowed it down to finally Ashland and UVA. Ashland is one of the best D2 programs in the country. It had the same aspect as UVA. Loved the coaches and staff, loved the facilities. It was super nice there. Just it didn't have exactly what I was looking for compared to UVA. With just the conference teams and the weather and the location and all that. I received offers as well from ODU, Marietta, and a few schools in the D2, D3.
And the MAC schools as well?
Yeah, and the MAC schools.
As far as showing interest?
Yeah. I had D1 interest from Ohio University, Akron. Went on some visits to Toledo, and then I also was in contact with Kent State for a while.
Okay. Let's talk about what they're actually recruiting you for as a kickoff specialist. We'll talk about that again, the kickoff specialist, field goal kicker, as well as punter.
Yeah, so when they had initially reached out to me, they were pretty much saying that they needed a kicker for next year. I knew I was the man for the job to come in as a true freshman and start a kicker. And kickoff is, I think, one of my stronger suits. So coming in, I think I could do both. They already had a position filled at punter, but I talked to the coaches a little bit, told them that I had a pretty good season at the punting position. And I told those coaches that if I feel like I can do all three, and I feel like if I can earn all three jobs, I want the task.
Your longest punt was 66 yards this year, correct?
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah. Just talk about what motivates a kicker. How does a kicker get motivated to go out there and do what you do?
Yeah, it's definitely different. Not being the guy that's bashing heads all night, but it's kind of the same aspect too. Like for me, to stay motivated. It was getting in the weight room, going up to AP prep with my guys, Jason Prater, Drew Irvin, getting the work in on every aspect of my game, on the field, off the field, in the classroom. And then obviously support from my community, friends, coaches, parents. Without them, I probably wouldn't even be in this situation right now.
Right. Last thing, just talk about how kicking here at Jackson has prepared you for your next journey.
Yeah. I mean, Jackson's like no other school around here. You know, you got Ironton, who's a winning program, like a huge winning program with going to state champions and all, but they don't have the same mentality that we have down here too, with something that's stuck with me is the tradition and the culture down here. We wear Passio on our helmet, and that's something that stuck with me. I wore Passio on my cleats this year. And then going on to UVA, their tradition is PWAV. Pursue excellence with a vengeance. So that's something that kind of stuck with me. It reminded me of home, and that's kind of what came into my decision in the end as well.
Yeah. I appreciate you, buddy.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we thank Todd Compson for doing that video, and you saw what a smart young man he
is,
as far as and as well as being very talented. And the bottom line is, he could have gone a lot of places, as you could hear from his dialogue there. But he went to UVA wise because he liked the campus, liked the staff, and there was an immediate opportunity, it seems like. So he's not going to wait his turn. It looks like he's got the credentials, and he's going to go right to work kicking there. So we certainly wish him the best. And, of course, we remember great backstory with Ethan Crabtree, because he was this kicker as a sophomore, was very good then. He had that summertime accident.
Yes.
That was so serious, off-the-field accident. With broken vertebra, fractured vertebra there, and he was able, had to sit out the whole year, had to come back, had to train himself back into shape.
Yep.
And football is still a contact sport. You're out there as a kicker.
That's right.
And he just excelled. A talented kid who worked his behind off to get even better.
Yes, he did.
And now he is a Division I caliber kicker. Highly rated.
Yay.
As a kicker. All right, on the sports side, we have to mention this. Last night, the Jackson Iron Ladies had their last home game of the season.
Okay.
And did they end it in style? 59-46 over the highly touted Uniondo Lady Shermans.
Nice. Way to go, girls.
Both teams came in with an 18-2 record. And Uniondo has aspirations to go very far in the tournament. And they are in Jackson's division, so who knows, they may play again. But Uniondo has lost to only two teams this year. This is before last night. They've lost to one of the Olentangy schools. You know how big they are up in Columbus. And Dayton Wayne, a big athletic school out of Dayton. They have not been beaten or come close to by any team in southeastern Ohio. But the Jackson Iron Ladies did it last night. Even though several of them had been sick with the flu, they were all able to play. And they got off to a big start and were able to hold off a very talented Uniondo team to win 59-46. This was the last home game for this amazing senior class that has won three straight FAC championships. And Maddie Walburn, TJ Carpenter, and Kenzie Davis all had double-doubles in sports language. That is double digits in scoring and rebounds. And Sydney Hughes played the whole game too as a starter and contributed as well. little TJ's little sister, Sydney Carpenter. She may have been sicker than anyone else. She had a shot in the morning.
Oh,
so
no.
She could go, but she contributed as well. A lot of ball handling, defense, and 10 points for her. So a storybook
way
ending
to go,
for
ladies.
The Jackson Iron Ladies. And, of course, the tournament all starts next week. Their first game will be February the 17th against Hillsboro over at Chillicothe. Our other three girls basketball teams in our local area, Oak Hill, Wellston, Vinton County, will all play a first game Monday, February 12th. All those games will be on the radio. Our technicians willing, our broadcasters willing, and our board ops willing.
That's right.
All right. Want to tell you about a couple of some big games going on tomorrow night. Not tomorrow night, but on Saturday. We do have a couple games on Friday night, but I want to talk about a big day at Vinton County High School on Saturday. Jackson will be going up to Vinton County, and it's one of those where there's going to be five different games. Freshman boys, JV girls, JV boys, varsity girls, and varsity boys.
Okay.
Five games. Talk about, you know, a big day of basketball. All this will be taking place on Saturday. So, and there's some good matchups there. The Jackson and Vinton County boys are both excellent, and they're going to be playing each other. That'll be the very last game. The next to last game will be the Iron Ladies and the Lady Vikings. All right, a couple other things to tell you here before we run out of time. They have set the date for the Jackson County Apple Festival Queens contest.
Okay.
It's a little early this year. As you know, they link it to the Good Friday weekend.
Yeah, it's always Easter weekend.
Right.
Yeah.
And the reason is they know that the middle school auditorium is available that day because school is out for Easter vacation and they have more time to set up the auditorium.
Sure.
So this year, because of when Easter is, when Good Friday is, it's going to be on Saturday, March the 30th. And so that is triggering the application period. And that application period is now open for girls who want to be the 2024 Jackson Apple Festival Queen. So we've had that story in the paper. It's posted online. If you're interested, the clock is ticking. I believe the deadline to enter is Saturday, March the 2nd.
Okay.
So that is coming up pretty doggone quick. So let's see. What else can we tell you before we run out of time? Oh, I want to tell you about the Open Table. That is a new ministry, a non-conventional ministry that is opening in Jackson. A former Christ United Methodist pastor, Dale Likens, who has been away for a while at different churches. He's now in the Mason, Ohio area near Cincinnati. He is starting an Open Table in Jackson. And the launch is going to be where, you know, they're inviting people to come and be part of it or participate or take a look at it, see if they're comfortable with it. Sunday, February 18th at 6 p.m. at the Marquette Cultural Arts Center. That picture, that is Dale Likens. A lot of folks know Dale because he was here for quite a while. Now it's called the Christ Church of Jackson.
Yes.
But it used to be the Christ United Methodist Church. Dale is on the right there, and the man on the left is the facilitator, Dale Rollins. He's going to be playing a big part in the event or in the Open Table as well. But the Open Table kind of started off late last year. They've been having some local meetings, but this is the formal public launch.
Okay.
And anyone is invited. And here is what they say. The Open Table is especially welcoming to those who have traditionally been on the margins of society, including persons who identify as LGBTQ+. Now, it's not just for people in that category.
Right.
But they want to make it clear if you're in
everyone's
that category,
welcome.
Everybody is welcome. And that is called the Open Table. There is an Open Table in the Mason area, and Dale has been there, and he is going to make the trips to Jackson for these meetings. It's called, it's a ministry, and he says that it is a community where someone can explore faith, but not part as an organized religion. It is not focused on production value or programming. It isn't driven by membership goals or fundraising growth. They say that the Open Table is real, accepting, and loving. We get real about our stories, our doubts, our questions, and our struggles. We accept each other, and we do acts of love in the world. Recently, the Open Table made a care donation to the nurses out at Holzer Medical Center Jackson to kind of show, you know, their love for the community and to show support for people who do good things in the community. So I know that I didn't say a whole lot about the Open Table. Sounds, different.
Now, where and when is this?
It's at 6 p.m. a week from this Sunday at the Marquet Cultural Arts Center.
At the Marquet,
that is the launch event, and it's open, you know, to anybody. You don't have to sign up in ahead of time or have any certain qualification or anything. The door is open at the Marquet. We're going to have a story in Saturday's paper, more about the open table and this launch event. So that is where we are right now, Jennifer. We've run out of time, but we'll be back sometime next week.
Okay, well, that sounds wonderful. And again, Pete, thank you and Red for taking time to spend with us this morning, as you all always bring us up to date on the latest and greatest in news and events going on. So, all right, well, have to get out of here for the day. Thank you all so much for tuning in, and we'll be right back here tomorrow. Thanks for watching.
See you later.